Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome back to another episode of the Madhouse Podcast. As always, I am your host, Mad Max. Today's episode is our part three in our 40 years of WrestleMania. First off, happy Easter to everybody today. I know it's been a while since you guys have heard from me. I just got over having the flu, which really, really sucks. Couldn't record, couldn't talk, but I had it, the kids had it, it was just bad, and, you know, here we are, Easter Sunday with not a whole lot to do, but starting to come around and feel a little bit better and everything like that. I hope everybody's Easter is going fantastic. The get-togethers, the egg hunts, whatever you guys are doing, I hope all goes well. But anyways, like I said, today's episode is our part three in our four-part series, 40 Years of WrestleMania. In this episode, we're going to be talking about WrestleMania 21 through WrestleMania 30. This was probably the turning age as far as the new pool of talent that was going to come off going into this third decade of WrestleMania and everything like that. So WrestleMania 21 emanated from the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California, and this was a first for a lot of things that went on at WrestleMania 21. It was the debut of the Money in the Bank ladder match, which featured Edge, the winner, Christian, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Kane, and Shelton Benjamin. There's a lot of highlights in this match, no doubt about it. The event opened with WrestleMania 21 opened with the WWE Tag Team Champions, Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero, going up against each other, which that was the first time that it happened, and these guys actually had a damn good match. It was real interesting to see these two guys go at it the way they did. You had the incredible matchup between Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels. That was really good. You had The Undertaker versus Randy Orton, which was also really good. You had the two main events, and this is what the definition of building a star was going to be. On SmackDown, you had JBL defending the WWE Championship against the new guy, John Cena. And then, of course, on the other side, Raw, Triple H would defend the World Heavyweight Championship against the winner of the 2005 Royal Rumble, Batista. And both of those matches were incredible. They told great stories, and they told the idea that the new wave of superstar has arrived here in the WWE. There was even a sumo match. Aki Bono, who was the reigning sumo champion of the world, the Yokozuna in Japan, went up against the Big Show, which I thought was really interesting. It was cool build-up, but the actual sumo match was not all that great. Like, sumo wrestling is entertaining to watch if you've ever seen it and everything like that, but not at this great, because as great of an athlete Big Show is, he's no sumo wrestler. So for him to get beat the way he did in, like, less than 10 seconds was funny. More funny than anything, so that was kind of cool. They had a Piper's Pit segment, which I thought was really cool, which featured Roddy Roddy Piper and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That was really, really entertaining to see. Yeah, 21 was like the beginning of that Ruthless Aggression era, or not necessarily the beginning of the Ruthless Aggression era, but somewhat the end of it in a way, because now we're going into this new wave, because it marked the beginning of something spectacular. Going into WrestleMania 22, you saw a lot of the same faces, but this time in bigger matches. Now, the only one missing in this aspect was Dave Bautista. He was the World Heavyweight Champion. He won the title at WrestleMania 21 and had kept it for a while. And then going into 2006, right before the Royal Rumble, I believe he tore his bicep and he had to forfeit the title, and he was no longer the champion. Going into WrestleMania 22, the story was that, tragically, that in November of 2005, Eddie Guerrero unexpectedly passed away. I believe it was some type of heart disease that he had contracted, or he had not known about or wasn't diagnosed with or anything like that. And it wasn't something that anybody saw coming. The rumor was that he was supposed to fight Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 22, which would have been a fucking classic. But unfortunately, that didn't really go the way it went. The story going into WrestleMania 22 was Rey Mysterio had just won the 2006 Royal Rumble. And Rey was going into the main event in a triple threat match for some odd reason against Kurt Angle and Randy Orton for the world title. And while that match was good and everything like that, I really think a straight-up one-on-one match between Kurt and Rey would have been fantastic because those guys would have tore the house down. But they added Randy in there because I don't think WWE was ready to get behind Rey as a babyface, let alone a world champion. So, you know, who knows what the outcome of that would have been. But it was a good moment. It was a cool moment. Rey comes out the winner, you know, dedicates his performance to Eddie Guerrero and things like that. It was such a heartfelt moment. The main event on Raw was John Cena once again defending the WWE Championship against Triple H. This was a pretty good match because a lot of people thought that the measuring stick out of all the years of the WWE and people who were fans of the Attitude Era knew that the measuring stick around WWE had to have been Triple H. If you can get a good match out of Triple H, make no mistake about it, then it's not going to change anything. It's going to be that you are the top guy for a reason. It worked with Dave Bautista, and make no mistake about it, it was going to work with John Cena. Now, Cena won the title at WrestleMania 21. Edge won the Money in the Bank ladder match, and then the cash-in happened right before New Year's resolution, and that infamous moment when he does it for the first time is such an iconic moment. But I think Edge, having won the title and having become this overnight sensation, there was a fire lit under him that he could definitely benefit it. Because I didn't understand why the main event of WrestleMania wasn't Edge versus Cena. You know, imagine that. That would have been a great, because their rivalry picks up in 2006 and in 2007. And it's a great rivalry, to say the least, and everything like that. I would have had Edge versus Cena. No disrespect to Triple H, but it would have been fantastic. Edge didn't get that. Unfortunately, he was in the hardcore match with the hardcore legend himself, Mick Foley. And that match was crazy as well, too. I think the only thing that pissed me off about that match was that they had Joey Styles call it. Because Joey Styles is a great announcer, and he was the announcer for Monday Night Raw, you know, and for some reason, because he doesn't sound like he had cut that infamous promo, because he doesn't sound like Jim Ross, they replaced him with Jim Ross. And I was like, they fired Jim Ross for some reason or another, because they had been trying to get rid of him. And then they bring in Joey Styles, but then they don't like Joey Styles because he doesn't sound like Jim Ross. I was like, okay, that doesn't make sense really at all. Anyway, but Joey Styles comes out for one match, doesn't call the rest of the show really at all, and everything like that, and it just kind of goes bonkers and things like that. Like, the match itself is really, really intense, because the year before, Cactus Jack, Mick Foley, had a match with Randy Orton, same thing, hardcore match, and that put Randy on the map. And then now, here we are, you know, the following year, and he's going to do the same thing, this time with Edge. And this is a great moment for Edge. Edge needed to steal the moment because, you know, even Edge has said that they kind of stole his thunder and he had to get it back at WrestleMania. And I think he did. And it was good because after that, he channeled that into another world title run, which happened later that summer. So that was cool. The Money in the Bank ladder match, and this year, it was Rob Van Dam was the one that won it. RVD won. He went up against Shelton Benjamin, Matt Hardy, Bobby Lashley, Ric Flair, and I think Finlay was in that one as well. Yeah, everybody was in it. It was RVD, Matt Hardy, Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, Finlay, Ric Flair. Yeah, all those guys were in it. Flair has that moment where he gets superplexed off the top of the ladder that he's rushed to the back only to come back later. I was like, that shows you the guts right there of Flair. he may be in his 50s at this point, but he can still go. Same thing with Finley, because Finley's up in his age too. So, you know, those guys were doing it, you know, pretty big. And it was cool to see RVD win it. You know, RVD had been around for a long time and never been the world champion, much like Edge the year before. Those guys had been around for a while, but they had never been the world champion before. So, you know, that was cool for them. Shawn Michaels had the street fight against Vince McMahon, and I was like, wow, that got violent really quick. But it was a cool moment. It was a cool moment for Shawn Michaels, because there was little subtle hints here and there that they were going to bring back D-Generation X, because just Shawn Michaels does the crotch chop in that match. And then, ironically enough, Triple H does it in the main event as well when he's fighting John Cena. So there's, you know, there's a little bit there, and then it comes full circle that summer when DX reunites. So that was kind of cool to see that. What else happened that night? Chris Benoit versus JBL for the U.S. title. That was all right. There wasn't a lot of memorable stuff from WrestleMania 22. It was in Chicago, and just a bunch of stuff that went on. And you kind of had a so-so WrestleMania, but it was after the night in Chicago that WrestleMania started. Now it was starting at WrestleMania 23, and you know, it's a good segue, but starting at WrestleMania 23, they would be in stadiums rather than these big arenas. They would be in stadiums, like football stadiums and things like that, because WrestleMania 23 was in Ford Field in Detroit. And the build-up for WrestleMania 23 was this Clash of the Titans type shit, because you had John Cena defending the WWE Championship again against Shawn Michaels. And as great of a match that was, that should not have been the main event, because the main event, in my opinion, was Dave Bautista versus The Undertaker. That was a great match. Dave Bautista versus The Undertaker for the World Heavyweight title. Taker had just won the Rumble in 2007, and this was a great moment for those guys and things like that. This was good. And those two guys went out and had a fucking classic match. But I think it all kind of comes together, because I think the selling point for WrestleMania 23, in my opinion anyway, was the Battle of the Billionaires. It was a Vince McMahon versus Donald Trump. It's the return of Donald Trump, because, yeah, he made appearances at WrestleMania 5 and 6, or no, WrestleMania 4 and 5, because it was in Atlantic City. He comes back for WrestleMania 23. Each of the guys were going to pick a representative, and whoever won the match would be the winner, and the loser would have to get their head shaved. And Vince McMahon chose Umaga, the reigning Intercontinental Champion, while Donald Trump chose the ECW champion, Bobby Lashley. And the special guest referee was none other than Stone Cold Steve Austin. And this was a pretty cool match. It had a lot of entertaining moments, but at the end of the match, you know, Bobby Lashley wins and they shave Vince McMahon's head, which I thought was kind of hilarious. So, yeah, that was kind of cool. Then they had the Money in the Bank ladder match in WrestleMania 23, which featured a bigger crew, because now it had eight guys. It was Edge, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, CM Punk, Finley, Booker T, and who else? Who am I missing? It's Edge, both the Hardy Boys, CM Punk, Randy Orton, Finley. Who am I missing? Eight guys in the match. Booker T and Ken Kennedy. What the fuck, man? Mr. Kennedy, he won the match. Like, what the fuck? Mr. Kennedy would win the match. And this is kind of like one of those sad things about it, because, like, Mr. Kennedy won the match. And, you know, he wins Money in the Bank and everything like that. And then the next night on Raw, he goes out and announces that he's going to cash it in at the next year's WrestleMania, right? You know, so that's kind of cool or whatever and things like that. So it was a cool moment for Mr. Kennedy, but unfortunately that doesn't really go according to plan, because then he gets, I don't know if he gets hurt or if he fails the wellness policy, because he's suspended a little bit after that. And then he loses all kind of credibility after that. It's a great moment for Mr. Kennedy, but it never comes to fruition. And he loses it to Edge. Edge takes over, and Edge cashes in once again and things like that. WrestleMania 23 had some of those great moments. You know, a fantastic match from John Cena and Shawn Michaels. There was this great, you know, Giants match between the great Khali and Kane, which was, eh. Chris Benoit took on MVP for the U.S. title, and this would actually be kind of haunting because this was the last WrestleMania for Chris Benoit, as he would take his own life later on in the year. And that was it. Not too many guys, you know, would do a whole lot in this WrestleMania. This is probably like the only time you see them in WrestleMania and things like that. So WrestleMania 24 was in Orlando, Florida, at the Orange Bowl, or at the Citrus Bowl. And it was the first time in a while, I think since WrestleMania 9, that they had an outdoor arena. Like, this was outside in the middle of Florida, you know, right around springtime. So, you know, that was kind of cool to see. The main event was the World Heavyweight Championship between The Undertaker and Edge, which that was great. The WWE title was on the line. Randy Orton defended the title in a triple threat match against both Triple H and John Cena. That was okay. So I think the selling point for WrestleMania 24 was the biggest versus the best. It was the Big Show returning after he had been gone for a while. And he comes back and he looked like he lost a lot of weight. He went from the 500-pound giant, dude, it looked like he lost, like, you know, because when he came back, he was like 440, you know, he looked slim, you know what I mean? And he was going up against Floyd Mayweather, which I thought was hilarious. I was like, there's no way this is actually going to be like a match. And it was, and then, you know, he gets in there and they start fighting, and it was cool seeing Mayweather get, like, the shit kicked out of him for real. Like, not like like boxing, like wrestling-wise, you know, because in boxing, he was never going to lose no matter what, but to see him get slapped and body slammed and stepped on by the Big Show was hilarious. That was funny. And then, you know, of course, you know, there had to be some interference from his team to kind of help him get the win. And then Floyd takes off his glove and he grabs the brass knuckle chain and knocks out the Big Show. Big Show doesn't get up. 1, 2, 3, 10. And he wins it. And that was funny. That was actually entertaining to see that. So another match that a lot of people remember, WrestleMania 24, it was supposed to be the final farewell match for Nature Boy Ric Flair. It was him and Shawn Michaels. That match went back and forth. It was great. And then that moment that lives in infamy, when Shawn Michaels is setting up that sweet chin music and he looks up at Flair, and Flair just looks like a beaten dog, but he's got his hands up like he wants to keep fighting, and Shawn Michaels pulls the trigger. You know, I'm sorry, I love you. And then, bam, sweet chin music, 1, 2, 3, no more Flair. And that was kind of an emotional moment, because a lot of guys, especially guys like Flair, they won't know when it's time to hang it up. And it's kind of sad, because if you look at it now, I've always looked at that match as Flair's swan song. Like, yeah, he would later have more fucking matches in TNA and later on and do other stuff. And then have that Ric Flair goodbye match with Jeff Jarrett. Like, that was like in 2022. And I was like, dude, come on. That's fucking ridiculous. But the match in 2008 with Shawn Michaels, in my opinion, that's it. That's the end of the road for him. Nothing more, nothing less. And things like that. So that was a good match. It really was. What else? So the Money in the Bank ladder match this year, was CM Punk, Mr. Kennedy, Matt Hardy, John Morrison, MVP, Carlito, Shelton Benjamin, you know, just like a bunch of mid-card guys who a lot of people didn't know who was going to win it. And then that was the first of CM Punk's win for the Money in the Bank ladder match, which he won. And he would later that summer, become the World Heavyweight Champion. So that was kind of cool. Um, not too many other standout matches from WrestleMania 24. It was cool. It was an okay event because I remember it started off late off in the day, so the sun was still out. But by the time we got to the end of the match, it was dark out, and you still got some great matches along the way. WrestleMania 25, they call it the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. I fucking hate this WrestleMania with a passion because of that. They kept saying it's the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania, and I was like, no, it's not. Because you're telling me that WrestleMania 1 is the anniversary. I was like, that doesn't make sense. When you get married, it's not your first anniversary. I hated everything about this whole buildup for WrestleMania 25. Like, I remember them calling it the Silver WrestleMania, like the 25th annual WrestleMania. That's fine. I like that. But they kept referring to it as the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. Like, even in the buildup between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, Michaels even says that. He goes, at the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I was like, it's not the 25th anniversary. Stop saying that. Stop saying it's the 25th anniversary of that. You know, same way I feel now when they say John Cena's the GOAT. Stop saying that, too. Stop. Just stop. You know, it got annoying really, really quick. And it's like WWE didn't notice that at all because that was all their promotional stuff. Like when you bought the shirts or the poster, there it was, the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. That's no, that's not what it is. But anyway, the selling point for that was it took place in Houston, Texas at the Reliant Stadium. And the selling point was Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, part one. And, oh man, that was a fantastic match. That was a hell of a match that they had. You know, it went back and forth, and you didn't know what was going to happen. And then for Shawn Michaels, for Undertaker to win it the way he did, I was like, damn, that was crazy. And then the fact that those guys were, like, fifth on the card, and there was, like, three or four matches left on the show. It's like, what? You going to keep going after that? Like, what's crazy, like, so right after Taker and Michaels was the World Heavyweight Championship match. It was Edge defending against the Big Show and John Cena. If you look at the crowd, if you look at the crowd difference in those matches, everybody was coming and glued for Michaels and Undertaker. And then by the time they got to the triple threat match for the world title, it was like, damn, it's like the air just kind of went out. And then by the time they got to the last match on the card, which was Triple H versus Randy Orton, it was dead a little bit. Like, it was cool, and everybody was hyped about it, but it was nowhere near as loud and thunderous as it was for Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. So, yeah. Triple H versus Randy Orton's match, Triple H versus Randy Orton for the WWE title, that match should have been a fucking street fight, but they just built it up. They built it up so well that these two guys were gonna rip each other limb from limb into this match, and then they put it on last, and they had a stipulation. But it's a regular match, like there's no stipulation. And then they made the rule that if Triple H gets disqualified, he loses the title. And I was like, that's no fun. You're handcuffing the guy. Like, we want to see him break Randy Orton's neck. Like, what the fuck? You know, this should have been a street fight, or at least a cage match or some shit. And I don't know, man. They really didn't do this WrestleMania justice. Like, I was hyped that it was in my hometown, but I was very disappointed that it was poorly executed, if that makes sense. The matches were okay, but it wasn't all that great. They had the 25 years of WrestleMania all women's battle royal, and Santino Marella wins it. And I'm like, that's a dude. A guy wins the match. Really? That's how we're going to do that? So then they had the Money in the Bank ladder match. CM Punk wins it again, but this time it had a different plethora of guys in the match itself. Punk wins it back-to-back, 24-25. He cashes in, wins the world title. I've noticed the pattern there. He won the Money in the Bank. He cashes in to win the world title right around the same time, like going into SummerSlam. Because the first time it was against Jeff Hardy. No, the first time it was against Edge, and they built it up going up against JBL. The second time was against Jeff Hardy, and they built him up going up against The Undertaker. So why they didn't start pushing Punk more and more is beyond me. But 25 should have been pushed to the moon because of how they were doing it. But, I mean, fuck, they couldn't even tell the difference between the 24th and the 25th anniversary or whatever. Anyway, so WrestleMania 26 was in, I believe it was at the University of Phoenix or Stadium, because it was in Glendale, Arizona. Not Glendale, it was in Phoenix. And the main event was John Cena versus Batista for the WWE title, and then Edge versus Alberto Del Rio for the World Heavyweight title. Now, the surprising thing here was that that match opened the night. It was Edge and Del Rio. I think they were the first match on the card. And I was like, wow, really? The World Heavyweight title and the Royal Rumble winner are going to go first. That's interesting. But when you realize that Edge retires after this match, it was more poetic. You know what I mean? Like, it made sense. Like, they didn't want Edge to get hurt. They just, you know, threw him on the first match and let it get out the way and things like that. And it was okay. John Cena and Batista was like a match made in heaven. Those two guys' rivalry kicked off. And this would ultimately be Batista's swan song as well, because even though their rivalry continued after this WrestleMania, Batista would leave the company in that year. I think it was 2010, and he would go on to start his movie career and things like that. The match was pretty good. You got two guys who kind of do the exact same thing, but it was a good rivalry. It was a good build-up, but I just think it should have lasted a little bit longer, even though it was kind of, like I said, it was Batista's, like, one more on the way out. It was kind of a good way for him to end his first run in WWE, so to speak, so that was all right. I think what WrestleMania 26 is most famous for is it's the swan song of Shawn Michaels, because it's the rematch of Michaels and Taker, except in this one, if Undertaker wins, Shawn Michaels retires. And it's like, okay, the deck is definitely stacked against Shawn Michaels no matter what, because Undertaker has not only has the streak, but he's already beaten Michaels before. So it's like, okay, what more can we do? The build-up for the second one was much more elaborate than the first one. The first one was the light versus the dark. The second one is career versus streak. And as great of a match this was, and it did go on last, I don't think it was better than the first one. Like, I really do think that first match between Michaels and Taker was really, really good. And it set the tone for what a WrestleMania match should be between two icons like that. And the second one was great, but it wasn't as good as the first one. So, and it had that real kind of the act of defiance at the end when Shawn Michaels slaps the Undertaker and Taker does the final tombstone and just leaves Shawn Michaels there. And it's like, wow, that's crazy. That was pretty cool. I think that year's Money in the Bank feature didn't really feature a whole lot of guys that you thought were going to win. It had Kofi Kingston. It had Mark Henry, MVP. It had a lot of guys that you thought were, you know, a lot of guys. I was like, I don't see any of these guys possibly winning and things like that. So for Jack Swagger to win it, it's like, okay, I guess. But, you know, there was that. Triple H fought Sheamus in that match, which was okay. That was a cool little thing to build Sheamus, but for some reason he doesn't get the payoff like a heel should. Triple H does. And there wasn't really any type of stand-down matches. I mean, they had the match between Bret Hart and Vince McMahon, which I thought was so fucking dumb, because at this point, Vince is not a trained wrestler, and Bret is so far, like, this is, what, 2010? He had retired, like, what, 9 years earlier? It's like, dude, come on. This guy don't even look like he's in shape. He wore jeans and a t-shirt. He wore, like, denim shorts and a t-shirt. And it's like, dude, he couldn't even apply the sharpshooter correctly. Like, it just looks bad. It looked awkward. And, you know, the whole Bret Hart coming back and, you know, after the Montreal Screwjob and everything like that, I was like, dude, we didn't really need that. That would have been cool to have him come out, you know, at WrestleMania 18, the last time it was in Toronto, or, you know, because I don't think, to be honest, I don't think WWE has gone back to Toronto or Canada for WrestleMania, really at all, since WrestleMania 18. So it didn't make sense then, and didn't make sense now. It's just, it was bad to watch. It really was. So moving on to WrestleMania 27. I think this one was in Atlanta. Atlanta, Georgia, at the Georgia Dome. And a lot of people say that this was probably the worst WrestleMania they've seen because of how it played out. Because the main event was John Cena versus The Miz for the WWE title, people weren't really buying The Miz as a champion. Like, don't get me wrong, it's a good notch on his belt, but I don't think he was ready for it just yet. He makes a great heel, don't get me wrong. You know, the feud with him and Randy Orton was really good to kind of solidify him to go up against John Cena. But if you look back at it, you got to look at what that does for a career like The Miz. Like, to be honest, it's at this moment that The Miz's career kind of took off into that main event spot. Like, if he had won the title here, that would have been interesting. Or if he would have cashed in right here, that would have been kind of cool. But, you know, the idea that it's like almost somebody has to play the third fiddle to this intense scrutiny, because WrestleMania 27, it was hosted by The Rock. You know, we hadn't seen The Rock since WrestleMania 20 and things like that. And The Rock comes out and he does all this other stuff. And the buildup for John Cena versus The Miz is overshadowed because The Rock and John Cena are going back and forth at each other. And it's like, dude, but then why have Miz in the match? Just why not make it John Cena versus The Rock at that year's WrestleMania? But they announced it the next day, and then boom, we're set for WrestleMania 28. But I was like, that leaves WrestleMania 27 high and dry, because now Miz is a great heel, but I don't think he's a main event type heel. You know, it should have been him and CM Punk, or him and Randy Orton. Like, Miz and Randy Orton would have been okay, or Punk and John Cena would have been okay for the title, you know, going into that year. And then so it was Miz and Cena for the WWE Championship. And then who else was it? And then we had Taker, Triple H, in a no-holds-barred match, which that was a good setup for that rivalry going into that, because Undertaker had returned, and then Triple H returns the same day, the same night, at the exact same moment. They don't say anything. They just look at each other. Then they look at the WrestleMania logo, and you know for a fact that it's on. And then now we have this no-holds-barred match. And this match is, like, it's crazy because it goes back and forth. Triple H looks like he's going to be the one to do it. But then Taker realizes that, you know, you can't kill the dead man. And then the fact that Taker wins the match, but because he's so beat up, he's unable to walk out on his own 2 feet. He has to get carted off and things like that. That was the only highlight of the entire night. Other than that, there wasn't really a whole lot of standout matches. Orton took on Punk, which was okay, I guess. I'm not sure, because, yeah, it's forgettable. Like, to be honest, I don't even know who was all doing WrestleMania 27. Like, I don't even remember, like, who was the World Heavyweight Champion at that point. And it was Cena and Miz for a while. Yep, it was at the Georgia Dome and things like that, and oh, shit. Damn, I fucked up. Okay, so Edge versus Alberto Del Rio was this year. So that means the year before, at WrestleMania 26, it was Edge versus Chris Jericho. Damn, I can't believe I fucked that up. So Edge versus Rey Mysterio. It was Edge versus... Edge had just returned. He won the Royal Rumble, and he goes up against Jericho. Okay, yeah. So then the following year, Del Rio comes in, and he wins the Royal Rumble, goes up against Edge. Edge retires because they go on first. Yeah, they go on first. Okay, seeing that, man, I just fucked this whole episode up now. It was something different. Like, The match between Edge and Jericho was okay. The fact that Jericho won was, you know, impressive and everything like that. So that was kind of cool. The match between Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler was so... I don't know why that was even a match, but it was just weird. Yeah, there weren't really... You know, Cody Rhodes took on Rey Mysterio, which was okay, I guess. But yeah, this WrestleMania was just... It's easily forgettable, but it's overshadowed by the fact that a lot of people were just like, yeah, this didn't work for a number of reasons. So then we go to WrestleMania 28, 2012. This was at Sun Life Stadium in Miami. This one I do remember. And it was something... because WrestleMania 27 was the first time that the Money in the Bank was not featured, because by then, Money in the Bank had its own pay-per-view, so they took it off. So they kind of take away an attraction that WrestleMania always has, and it's been since then. Like, that's been 10 years now. 10 years since we've had a WrestleMania that had a Money in the Bank ladder match, which is crazy. But WrestleMania 28, it was 2012. Sheamus won the Royal Rumble, so he goes on to... WrestleMania to face Daniel Bryan for the world title, and he wins the match in like 15 seconds, and that was like, wow, okay, so they just fucking squashed the whole thing, and I don't understand why they did that. And then this was the year that the Big Show beat Cody Rhodes for the Intercontinental title, which is kind of something different, because the build up for that was that Big Show had never won at WrestleMania, and they kind of kept going back. I was like, yeah, he lost at 15. 16, 17, he wasn't at 18, he lost at 19, lost at 20, wasn't at 21, he won at 22, but it was a tag team match, and I was like, damn, he hadn't won at all, you know, they kept going back and forth with that, and I was like, wow, okay, that's depressing. So, yeah, so for Big, I think that was them kind of just giving Big Show, you know, something to do and things like that. So that was kind of cool. But the other main event that night for the WWE Championship was Punk and Chris Jericho, which I thought was really good. But the main event of that night was Rock versus Cena, once in a lifetime. And another main event, or not a main event, but another big match was Triple H versus Undertaker inside Hell in the Cell for the, you know, it was going to be the end of an era. And I never understood why they called it the end of an era, because Triple H would wrestle a little bit more after that. So would The Undertaker. So I was like, I don't understand why it's called the end of an era. It wasn't the last time we saw either of those guys. It wasn't the last time we saw the Hell in the Cell match. So what era ended? Like, I don't understand the era that ended. So, you know, it always threw me off when they try to do these things. Like, this match was... back and forth, because you thought Triple H was going to be the one to do it, you know, and then Shawn Michaels super kicks him, turns into a pedigree, 1-2, kicks out, and then Shawn Michaels sitting there in the corner like, damn, fuck, he has that look on his face like you try to cheat the devil and the devil caught you. it was real over the top dramatic stuff that happened in that match, but I'm glad The Undertaker won, because I don't think it should have been Triple H to end it, but it is what it is. Punk and Jericho was really good. It solidified the fact that Jericho, who had been out of the picture for a little while, proved that he could still go. And the fact that he went one-on-one with CM Punk was really, really special. So that was cool. Rock and Cena was like an echo of Rock and Hogan, because they went back and forth. You didn't know who was going to win. And even though they were in Miami, I honestly think had they not been in Miami, maybe Cena would win. But, you know, I think The Rock was going to win no matter what. But what bothered me about the once-in-a-lifetime buildup was that WrestleMania 29, 2013, MetLife Stadium, it's the same match. Rock, Cena, this time for the WWE Championship. The buildup for WrestleMania 28, the fact that these two guys were talking shit about each other for a whole year to hype this match up. And it wasn't even like to each other, like on TV or like to, it was like on social media. And I was like, dude, that's how you build for a match to be that intense, to be that important. And they're still keeping their, their animosity towards each other at an all-time high all the way for an entire year, that's saying something. But then to do it again, like WrestleMania 29, and the match is still there, I was like, okay, this doesn't feel the same way. This felt WrestleMania 28, Rock and Cena, it felt authentic. It felt real life. Like, you legit thought these guys were really not going to stand for each other, and then they got in the ring and they tore the house down. Going into WrestleMania 29, the buildup for that was okay, but it felt like it felt fabricated. Like, now it just feels like a normal WWE scripted event. Even though everything WWE does is predetermined and everything like that, it's like, that didn't feel authentic. It just felt like the same thing they've been doing for, 29 years now. So it's like, okay, you know, this was, I didn't like this to begin with. Like, imagine my aspect for WrestleMania 29, like my card, my dream match would have been, imagine if it was John Cena wins the Royal Rumble. Keep that. I would have The Rock in that same Royal Rumble, but get eliminated. But I would also have The Undertaker and guys like that in that Royal Rumble. That way, we could have, you know, some setup there. You know, it'd be, what if we saw John Cena versus CM Punk for the WWE Championship? You know, Punk would continue his, 465 days of terror? Because I think the way Punk had described it, that going into WrestleMania, it would have been like day 500. And then he would win the match, lose it the next night to whoever. And then I was like, that would have been good. That would have been good. Like, have him either win or lose the match at WrestleMania. It doesn't really matter. Because we get Cena what he wants, and we get Punk a WrestleMania moment finally. And then maybe, had we given him his Punk's moment at that time, he wouldn't quit and leave the WWE the 10 months after that. So you're saying to yourself, well, Max, if you go with that, what are you going to do with The Undertaker? I was like, well, we don't have a match for The Undertaker. We don't have a match for The Rock. Well, shit, fuck it. Let's have them go up against each other. Why not have The Rock and The Undertaker go at it? You know, have them square off in the Royal Rumble. And then, boom, Rock, Taker at WrestleMania. Because Taker is going to go away no matter what. And then the build-up for that could be the most electric. You know, how cool would that be? Rock, Taker, WrestleMania. You know, I would, that's a WrestleMania-worthy match. You know, now, the match that we got, Taker and CM Punk, that was okay. That was an okay match. That was a damn good, to be honest, that was the best match on the card, you know. But it's the best match on the card because they kind of ruined CM Punk's momentum by taking the title away from him and giving it to Rock and Cena, which that match was okay as well, but it wasn't as good as the first one, and it wasn't better than Punk and Taker. And then Triple H and Brock Lesnar had their street fight, which was okay, I guess. It stemmed from their feud that started at SummerSlam the year before, because Brock Lesnar breaks Triple H's arm, and then Triple H comes back for SummerSlam, where Brock Lesnar breaks his arm again. And there were rumors that Triple H was upset that nobody really bought into Triple H versus Brock Lesnar. I was like, yeah, because they tried to make it seem like Triple H was going to leave the WWE because he couldn't beat Brock Lesnar. And I was like, dude, you're not leaving nowhere. I was like, you're telling the wrong story here. I was like, you're defending your friend, and you're defending going up against this guy who has it in his mind that he's the bully. And it's like, okay, we get that, but you're portraying yourself as a sympathetic baby face, but you're not. You're the boss now. We know, because this is the internet age. This is like social media is already involved with this. We know if Triple H loses, like, he's going to leave the company. No, he's not. He's just going to be off TV until they need him again. And sure enough, when we needed him again was WrestleMania, because Brock Lesnar F5 Vince McMahon on Raw one night. And it's like, dude, we saw that coming, you know? It's like, you don't have to, like, tell this weird story about it, you know? So WrestleMania 29, it was okay. It was the culmination of a lot of things that were going on.
it wasn't groundbreaking or anything like that. You know, like, Alberto Del Rio took on Jack Swagger for the World Heavyweight title, but at that time, nobody really cared about the, they weren't putting more emphasis on the world title anymore, because by the time we get to WrestleMania 30, it's already been unified. So nobody really gave a shit about it, so it didn't really make that much sense. Mark Henry defeated Ryback. The Shield makes their debut. Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose. They beat Big Show, Randy Orton, and Sheamus. And, you know, 29 kind of came and went. So then we get to WrestleMania 30. So WrestleMania 30, the winner of the Royal Rumble is Dave Bautista. He returns after so many years, and now he's going up against Randy Orton. Randy Orton beat John Cena at TLC to unify the World Heavyweight and the WWE Championship, which I don't know why they keep doing that. Like, it's supposed to be two separate titles. It's two separate brands, two separate titles. Like, this is where it kind of goes bonkers for WWE. After between 2010 to about 2015, this is where 2013, which is where we're at now. Yeah, 2013, this is where it really started going sideways, because WrestleMania 30 came, and the main event was, it was built up to be Randy Orton versus Dave Bautista, because that's for some reason, that's what they thought that everybody wanted, but no, that's not what anybody wanted, because in the year between 29 and 30, a new superstar had begun to rise, and that was Daniel Bryan. So going into the Royal Rumble that year, so Daniel Bryan had beaten John Cena for the WWE title at SummerSlam clean. Triple H was the referee, and it's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. After that match, Randy Orton came in and cashed in the WWE Championship, the Money in the Bank, won the WWE title, and then he held the title all the way to WrestleMania. I don't remember how John Cena became World Heavyweight Champion, but anyway. So, it's like, damn, Daniel Bryan didn't even get a proper run with the title. And then he's put in these matches against Randy Orton, but for some reason or another, he either wins by DQ or doesn't win at all. I'm like, why are we building? I was like, okay, they're building towards something here. The Royal Rumble comes, and I think that was, this is the 2014 Royal Rumble, and they're announcing the return of Dave Bautista, and he, of course, does return. He wins the Rumble, but gets booed out of the building. And I think that's that was the only time that you ever heard people chant Roman Reigns' name, because they wanted him to win, because they knew if Dave Bautista won, that's what that meant. So WrestleMania 30 featured the rise of the Yes Movement. And that was such a great moment for Daniel Bryan, because it had culminated from what had happened from SummerSlam to WrestleMania. It was a good, kind of like good story, because earlier on in the night, the buildup was if Daniel Bryan beats Triple H one-on-one at WrestleMania 30, he gets added to the main event, which he does, which is really good. So that was cool. Bray Wyatt made his debut. The Usos made their debut. WrestleMania 30 was legit. Now, I think the big sour, what everybody remembers from WrestleMania 30 is Brock Lesnar defeats the Streak, which, in my opinion, never should have happened. Like, they had booked a solid WrestleMania. They just had the wrong people go over. Like, it should never have been Randy versus Batista. It should have been Randy versus Daniel Bryan. It should have been Brock Lesnar versus Dave Batista. That would have been that's a WrestleMania match in and of itself, you know? But then where does that leave The Undertaker? And I was like, well, you could have Undertaker go up against anybody. Like, that year right there, that should have been the moment that they should have done John Cena versus The Undertaker. Like, come on, dude. That's perfect right there. Because you know John Cena's going to give him, this is still, even though it's the later years of the Super Cena run, but have him go up against The Undertaker. Why not? That'd be a great match. And then You know, but then a lot of people are going to be like, well, where does that leave Bray Wyatt? And I was like, well, Bray Wyatt, we can still do stuff with Bray Wyatt, because Bray Wyatt debuts, not necessarily debuts, but his first big feud on the main roster is against John Cena, and he loses at WrestleMania. I was like, we just killed his entire momentum in like a matter of like seconds, you know what I mean? So there's that, but I'm not sure what else they could have done to make WrestleMania 30 better. It was an okay event, but you know, it should have been a lot more than what it was. Like WrestleMania 25, it's an okay event, but it should have been more. So then we go to the following year, WrestleMania 31, and I think it's at this time they stopped using numbers, because now it's just WrestleMania. WrestleMania 31, it was at Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, California, which was a weird spot. But I think that was the new 49ers arena, so that was cool. Main event for that match was supposed to be Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, which nobody wanted to see. And then, Undertaker versus Bray Wyatt, I was like, that was a good match. And then John Cena versus Rusev for the U.S. title, that was also great. Triple H versus Sting, that, I don't know why that fucking match turned out the way it did. Like, I would have kept that match the same way as it is, have the NWO come out, have DX come out, that would have been cool to see, but Triple H, I don't know why Triple H had to go over. I really didn't understand that. So now we're going to start to see this push of Roman Reigns, and this is where it really falls apart. So, you know, we have this push. They're trying to push Roman Reigns. Like I said, this is where they're trying to get him over, and it's not necessarily working the way they should, but in the end, it worked out to an extent, because Vince wanted Roman Reigns to go over because the year before they were chanting Roman Reigns. But I don't think he understood that they were only chanting Roman Reigns because they didn't want to see Dave Bautista win the Royal Rumble. They wanted to see, you know, Daniel Bryan do it. And all that being said, it's like, okay, maybe we can try this again. And it would be cool and everything like that. So, you know, maybe it'll work to an extent. Maybe it'll work this time around, but the WWE Universe, they saw right through it. I mean, I saw right through it. I was like, they're going to try to get this guy over in the worst possible way. And, you know, so now the main event going into WrestleMania 31 is Brock and Roman, and it's like, okay, this match is not that great because both of these guys are like, you know, they kind of have a similar style, even though Brock Lesnar is he's got the technician and the strength and everything like that, to whereas Roman Reigns is more of a brawler in that aspect. And this match felt kind of lazy, and it was just kind of like Lesnar versus Goldberg, basically. But then, in the ultimate swerve ball, they throw us Seth Rollins cashes in and creates by far the greatest WrestleMania, one of the greatest WrestleMania moments of all time. But by far the greatest cash-in of all time, because he cashes in, curb stomps both of those guys, and pins Roman Reigns 1-2-3, and we got a new WWE champion in Seth Rollins. And then, so, it's like, wow, you thought Roman Reigns was going to be the hero of the day, and, you know, eventually he's not. It's stolen from Seth Rollins. But that only adds to the character of Seth Rollins. You know, even though he's a heel, there he gets the biggest reaction that night after he cashes in on Brock Lesnar. So that was kind of cool to see, to everybody goes home happy. You know what I mean? Like they didn't want to see Lesnar and Reigns, so they call an audible about halfway through the match, and here we are. So yeah, that was kind of cool. So but we're gonna go ahead and end the episode here. 31, and then the next episode, we're only going to cover maybe 32 to 35, because I've already covered
I covered 39 and I covered 38. So it might be 32 to 36. I'm not sure. But, yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it with this today's episode. And if you like the episode, be sure to follow the podcast on all podcast outlets, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Google Play, Odyssey, Reddit, wherever you're getting your podcast from. Be sure to follow the podcast on all social media outlets, Instagram and X, the Madhouse 21. Let me know what you guys thought about WrestleMania's 21 to 31, and whatever, you know, favorite match here and there, whatever the case may be, let me know. Instagram and X, the Madhouse 21. Be on the lookout for more episodes as they come out. Like I said earlier, I know I've been out. I know it's been a while since the last time we heard from me, but, you know, everybody's doing okay now. Hope you guys enjoyed the Easter weekend. I hope you guys are doing fantastic right now. I'm starting to come around. I got a bunch of episodes lined up this week, so be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for anything and everything that comes out of this podcast. And, of course, as always, be sure to embrace your inner madness.